Okay, we're up and running. Good evening, everyone. March 13, 2024, Historic Commission meeting. Calling it to order. Wayne, if you could give us a Zoom format, please.
Of course. This meeting will be conducted remotely over Zoom. Attendance by board and commission members will be remote, and remote attendance shall count toward quorum. The meeting may be broadcast live and will be recorded on ECAT. To use Zoom, you will need to use the link on the agenda or download the Zoom application and create an account. Let's see, while conducting meetings remotely, we will endeavor to keep meeting operations as close to our standard procedures as possible. However, use of this platform will necessitate some additional meeting protocols. Board and commission members and applicants will be on video and audio. Public participants will join the webinar as an attendee, so they'll be muted with no video feed. And if you're a member of the public and wish to make a comment, you can use the raise hand or Q&A function, and then we can acknowledge that and take that testimony. And one thing that is of note for all votes, they need to be by roll call. We need to take a roll call attendance, and votes need to be motioned and seconded with a statement of the person's last name, and then a roll call vote with a statement of name. And
did you add something to that? Gets longer every meeting.
The actual instructions are incredibly long. I do try to condense them to the relevant parts. Yeah.
Okay. We need to designate our alternates as voting members.
First, we actually need to
Bishop.
Yeah, and we need to do the roll call attendance.
Okay.
And Tim, you're getting very grainy and slow. I don't know if you need to drop off the video portion, if that would be helpful.
I probably need to drop off. I had the agenda pulled up.
Oh, I see.
Any better?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was overstepping my boundaries then. Okay.
Got it. Yeah. So roll call attendance.
Roll call. Hurley. Aye. Here.
Okay. Yep.
Spencer here.
Hands here.
Who else? And okay. Bob. And then Bob. Great.
Okay. Yeah.
Great.
I stepped on Amy.
Got it. Thanks. And you could vote to designate Bob to vote if you feel so moved. I think it's not necessary since we have a quorum, so we don't necessarily have to do that.
True. He's part of that now. Okay. All right. So let's move right to acceptance of the minutes from the previous meeting. They were sent out. Everyone had a chance to read them. Any additions, deletions, changes? Seeing none, can we have a motion to accept the meetings? Moved by Ed. That's a second. Hurley, aye.
Spencer, aye.
Ed?
Hands, aye.
Thank you.
Okay. It's everybody. All right, rolling. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So what's up next? We've got 115 on Washington. Let me promote the applicant to a panelist here. Great.
We ready?
I'm not seeing them yet. They did say they would be rejoining. Or let's see.
Maybe when they heard all those Zoom rules, they ran away.
No, they were here. I did promote them to panelists, and it indicated they would be rejoining as panelists, but I'm not seeing them actually here. Oh, there we go. Ah, okay. So, yes. And if the applicant could unmute, yes.
Yeah. I just don't know how to make the video.
Ah, yeah.
Oh, wait, I see it. There you go.
There you are.
Excellent. Thank you.
You want to go, Wayne? You want me to go?
Sure. Well, so we've got a demolition review application from Chris Fitzsimons, I believe is the correct pronunciation. It's for a property at 159 Washington Street. The group received the demolition review application and the advanced materials. The property has been partially demolished ahead of submission of the application. So for the commission's consideration tonight is a consideration of, has there been a violation of Chapter 117? If so, does submission of the demolition review application correct that violation? If there has been a violation, would there be a penalty such as the provision in Chapter 117 of the two-year window, which the commission has review and approval of all building permits? And then following on from that would be a fourth consideration. Would 159 Washington Street be considered historically significant? And then should the commission have that review authority over building permits, would the submitted plans, elevations, and materials for the proposed duplex at 159 Washington be approved by the commission? That's the brief outline, I think, of this the situation before the commission.
Can I go, Wayne? May I?
Of course, yes. Yeah.
This is very similar to what happened down at, is it 20 Central Street?
Correct, yeah, Crowfoot Gear.
Where a building was taken down without notification, without permission, without a demo permit. What we did is we went in there and we found that they were in violation. We voted that it was not of significant historic value. What we did after that was Wayne just noted, which gave us full control over any new construction or any permit issued. Now, this is a little different because they want to issue a permit to rebuild on this property. And it also gave us a two-year window where we have to approve any building permits from this homeowner or applicant. So this is pretty much identical to what happened there. What happened was I got a phone call that 159 Washington had been torn down. Went up to Wayne. Wayne and Stephanie happened to poke her head in. We went up to talk to Kevin Greiner. Kevin said that the applicant, well, wasn't an applicant. Well, he's an applicant for a building permit, I guess. But it thought that he would only be taking a little bit of it down. By the time we got there, we could consider it a complete tear down, I think, at this point, and be honest about it. So he had told Kevin there was a lot more rot and that the foundation was failing. I went out with Wayne. We confirmed that. Kevin said it was a little further along than he thought it was going to be. But in all fairness, we would have had to let it go anyhow because of deterioration. We do not have a,
Yeah, you would have if you waited like a week, because that was on our list and that was what I was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't. Well, I hope there was no significance to it.
I don't believe there was. Nope.
Yeah. So, you know, we can be the, you know, hell brimstone, fire brimstone guys here, but I don't think this is appropriate here. As had this gone through the stages, it probably would have, you know, not historically significant, allowed it to go down. Did he break the law a little, break the rules? Yes. So our only punishment, if you will, and I don't want to call it a punishment, I don't know what to call it, oversight will be approval of any plans and materials that go up on that lot and anything else that he does in town for the two-year period, exactly what we did at 20 Central.
It's not anything else in town. It's just that one property.
Yeah. Okay. For that. Yeah. For that pick. But has to come through us for any other. Just as we did on Central Street. So, you know, we could drag it out, make them apply, make them, you know, come in public hearing, this and that, or do what we did the other one and, you know, hope it doesn't happen again. Any thoughts, anyone?
I have one question. I drove by the site myself also, noticed that it was pretty tough condition, which I agreed upon from your examination. Is there any attempt to use any of the stuff that's left there, or did it just get all destroyed?
It's gone.
And none of the materials that's left in that little section can be used, or?
I doubt it.
Okay, thank you.
I think that's actually an addition, Bob.
Okay. I think Chris wanted to approach something.
Was that it?
I said the proponent raised his hand here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris was asking to speak.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd just like to tell, I spoke to Wayne and I'm sorry, I couldn't remember the other guy's name at the job site that day with Kevin Greiner.
That was me.
Yeah. We didn't intend, there was no intention of us to like tear that down without telling anybody we were going to tear it down. In the original set of plans that we had the building permit for, we were going to leave that existing structure in place and then build off the back of it an identical structure almost. When there was an old wraparound deck and sun porch there that had been built on after like maybe 40 or 50 years ago. When we took that off, that's when we found the foundation was actually crumbling before we even hit it with the excavator or anything like that. That's when I went to the building department straight away. I told the guy in the excavator to stop. We went to Kevin Greiner at the building department and I told him what was going on. And he told me, well, save as much of it as you can. And I said, okay. We came back, I had guys inside them doing demo by hand. And we told them to come out because the foundations were actually falling into the basement at that stage. We told them to come out and we start tearing down the walls piece by piece. We didn't try and just crush the whole thing. At that stage, we realized there was really nothing left there that you could save. The only piece that's standing right now was probably built on, I'm going to say, in the 60s or late 60s, early 70s. And that's what was left. So we stopped. But there was no intention there to like mislead anybody or do this without proper permits or anything like that. Just happened that when we took the porch off and the back off, it was just completely rotted out. There was nothing left there that we could have saved. When we did the original design for it, we did it with the intention, because I'd spoke to Wayne about a year ago and he told me that you couldn't just tear it down. You couldn't just tear it down willy-nilly. So when we designed the plans for it, if you look at the facades and the elevations and everything, it's pretty much identical to what was there before. Windows are in the same place. It's a nice wraparound porch. It's not one of these big box McMansions, you know what I mean? It was kept to scale and kept to look and fit in for what would have been there in the past. And I pull probably 200 permits a year in town. I own Eastern Roofing. I'm a roofing contractor. So I wouldn't replace a skylight in town without getting a permit for it. And Kevin Greiner can attest to that. I follow the rules. Just so happens that this one didn't know it was in such bad condition when we started. That's all. That's all I'd like to say.
Thank you, Chris. I don't think we'd be anywhere different at this point anyway.
Okay.
We're going to request your materials list. And we want to see the proposed plans.
Have all them.
Yes, we have those, yes. And beyond that, we'll impose the 2-year, I don't want to call it penalty, but I guess in essence it is, just to make sure that nothing else like this happens.
Now, can you explain what that is? Because I'm not familiar with what that is.
Wayne, could you do that one?
Of course, yeah. So in the demolition review bylaw, there's a provision for a property owner found in violation of the bylaw, that there are some, you know, penalties that can be imposed. One is a fine that accumulates daily. Another could be the, and that's what I believe Tim is contemplating here, that the applicant first has to get historical commission approval for a building permit on the affected property. You know, I think what could be contemplated tonight would be do the submitted plans and elevations and material specifications constitute, you know, is that what is going to be going forward to the building department? And if it is that something the historical commission would approve?
With approval, yeah, with approval of materials.
Yeah, so that, you know, could be something the commission does at tonight's meeting, I think, if this is actually what's going forward to the building department.
Well, that yeah, is, these are your plan. These are the plans, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And the building department has these?
Yeah, they already approved the permit for that.
Approved. Okay, yeah. Okay.
So the only thing that's changing on that, instead of saying existing foundation, it's going to say right. New foundation. At
new
the
foundation,
front.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
but everything else is the exact same.
Yeah, I mean, you heard fines and all this. We probably, you know, we'd end up in court probably. Ought to be town versus town or whatever. So we're trying not to get into deep into this with you. We're trying to work with you here.
Yeah.
The best we can with, you know, minimal penalty. Again, I hate using penalty, but I guess it is. But anyway.
Yeah,
I understand. So just stay with us here. Wayne, what do we want to do first here?
You know, if the commission thinks that this is a sensible approach, I would see five motions, seconds, and votes. And this would be very similar to what the commission did for 20 Central Street.
Yes.
So the first one would be to determine the applicant to be in violation of the demolition review bylaw.
Why don't we do it one at a time? And
we could let me sort of like go through the five and then, you know, see if that makes sense. And then we can sort of do them one at a time. So I think the first one could be a motion, second, and a vote to determine the applicant in violation of the demolition review bylaw. Then the second could be a motion and a second and a vote that the submittal of the demolition review application corrects the violation. Three could be a motion, second, and vote that the penalty for the violation would be the 2-year requirement that the commission approve any building permit at the property. Four could be a motion, second, and vote and determination that 159 Washington Street is not historically significant. And then five could be a motion, second, and vote to approve the plans, elevations, and materials as submitted, with the caveat that if they change, the applicant would come back to the commission for review and approval.
Everybody good?
Yeah.
Two quick questions here. The first one on demolition, wasn't there a partial demolition permit issued? Do we have to readdress that against the one he's requesting now, where he had a partial request for one? And in reference to that, where he was allowed to take part of the building down, is that going to change his application?
I don't think it necessarily changes the application for the proposed new building, the proposed replacement building. I believe that he could be in touch with the building inspector to see if he needs to amend the demolition application he submitted to the building inspector. I think that would be just an administrative correction if need be. I don't think it would kick off a new process in any way.
All right, thank you.
No, it wouldn't, no. All right.
I just didn't know if we needed to clarify it or not.
No, good thought, Bob. All right, everybody's clear on this. Wayne, if you could, first motion needed.
Of course, if you'll please be patient with me. So yes, if we could have a motion and a second and a roll call vote to find the owner of 159 Washington Street in violation of Easton's demolition review by law.
We have a question here.
Sorry, before you vote on that, I'd like to explain why I believe I'm not in violation of the demo review bylaw.
Okay.
And of a few reasons. Number one, we did have a partial demolition permit. The property is partially demolished. When it became evident that we would need additional demolition, we stopped. So we didn't continue to demo the property past what I believe and what the building inspector told me that we had a demolition permit for. So partial demolition was, permission for partial demolition was given to me by Kevin Greiner at the building department. I have the building permit that shows that. So if before you vote on saying that I am in violation, I don't believe I'm in violation. I believe everything I did was allowed. And then when we came across additional demolition that was needed, we stopped. And I went to the building department and I spoke to Kevin Greiner that morning. And then he said, save what you can. So we didn't tear the whole thing down. It would have been so much easier just to knock that down. We could have torn that building down in less than an hour. We didn't. We stopped and we saved what we could. Right now, after it was stopped, it was inspected and it's determined that the foundations are no good. They're not fit for purpose. So before you vote and say, okay, there's a 2-year ban or a 2-year penalty on this, I don't believe that I was in violation, and I still don't believe I'm in violation. That's where I stand right now.
Chris, is the end result the total demolition?
No, it's still standing.
Will the end result be a total demolition?
Will it be? That's what I'm asking for tonight. That's what I'm asking for.
It will be. I don't know how we go partial or whatever, but what percentage of the building would you say is left there?
Probably. Well, what do you consider the foundation? Do you maybe 75% of the foundation is left?
No, we're talking building. We're talking.
Okay. Well, the building, I had permission to take down the whole second floor off that building. So
right.
I already had permission for that. So by doing that, I can't have permission to do it and then be held in violation for doing what I had permission for.
I understand that. But in the end, you would have to apply for a total demolition.
And that's what we're here tonight for.
Right. But.
Right. But it's not like you knocked it down and now you're coming for permission. That's not the issue here at all.
I understand that.
The building is still there. 75% of the foundation is still there.
But the foundation is not
visible. When I took down from the roof line down, I already had permission to do that. Then we stopped. And now we're asking for additional permission. We're asking for permission. We're not saying we did this. We're asking for forgiveness. That's not where we are at all.
I'm sorry.
Everything we've taken down so far, we had permission for.
I read your application correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, it said to take the rear of the building down. Now, when I looked at the building myself, the right-hand side of that building straight on was gone.
No.
And what was left there is, as others have said, is not very much.
It doesn't say rear of the building. On the building permit that we had, we were taking everything from the front porch is off, the back porch is off, and then the whole second floor was coming off. The only thing that was going to stay would have been the three outside, if you imagine the building as a square, the front wall from the foundation to the first floor line, if you will, everything above that was going to be gone. The two side walls were going to stay, but they would have been reconfigured with windows and everything like that. So they would have been standing in fairness when I would go in there to frame it. We would be sistering onto old joists and stuff like that. And I'd say most of them would have been coming out because there would have been new windows, new headers, new door openings, etc. So what we've done so far, is not in violation of the demo review bylaws.
Well, then I would say you probably need to go back to the building inspector and reapply for a complete demolition permit. Okay. And then we will start our product. We're trying to work with you here, Chris. And the fact is, do you want to go back and have to reapply for a complete demolition permit? And then we'll have to have a hearing and decide whether that's extraordinarily significant. We're trying to work with you.
I know what you're saying. You're trying to work with me. But the fact is, if you're going to vote on a violation, okay, you have to find me. Yeah, you have to tell me how I'm in violation, because I haven't done anything to violate the bylaw. I went above and beyond to stay within those guidelines. You probably don't want to hear that. That's exactly how it is. I could skip along and go along with what everyone is saying to move things along here, but I'd rather be 100% upfront and truthful about it than just say something to move a permit along. Fact is, if I'm not in violation, then none of these penalties that we were talking about would kick in.
Your only penalty is, and you would run into this anyway, is us approving materials. Okay.
Well, which is, I'd like to talk 90%, about that because
which is about 90% of it is siding. The rest of it we like the plan. We're good with the plan. Siding is about the thing we would have. Excuse me?
It looks like Ed wants to speak.
Ed's wanted to speak for quite a while.
Go ahead.
Do you have Wayne chapter 117 in front of you?
I do.
What is the definition in that chapter of demolition?
Demolition, any act of pulling down, destroying, removing, dismantling, or raising a building, or commencing the work of total or substantial destruction with the intent of completing the same.
So there you are.
I think you could make an argument, Chris, that you didn't have the intent of knocking it down. And my question here is, does the building inspector have a right to jump the line and issue a permit for removing the second floor of a potentially historic house before we have a chance to vote? I think the error may be his and not the proponent.
It's a good point, Ed.
And my memory of my conversation with the building inspector was that he approved removal of the porches, but not of a second floor.
I'm going to pull up my building, my plans here for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
Actually, you know what? You guys have them. And on those plans, if you look at the framing section of the plan, it shows all TGI joists everywhere from the second floor up.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows what the intention was there, because you can't frame them in with existing floor joists or ceiling joists or whatever is there. If you look at the framing plans, that was approved by the building department. That's what it all shows. It also shows a bump out in the front where the old porches were of new construction there. So it shows, if you look at the framing and the materials used in the framing, it's all engineered lumber. It's not sistering onto ceiling joists or
Yeah, there's nothing to say you couldn't do that though, Chris, from the interior.
No, but my point is what was said there was the building permit is showing that the second floor was going to stay. It doesn't. It doesn't show that at all. It shows everything is new from the first floor walls up.
Well, so that's what the plan says. Did the building permit say that the second story is being removed? Does the building permit say that?
It doesn't say it that the second floor is being removed.
I understand that.
But the plans that were approved by the building inspector shows it. But it also doesn't say we're putting a wall here, we're putting a sink there. It's not that specific for everything's not written down on the building permit. It's two lines.
I understand that.
Yeah, but it doesn't show every specific part of every wall or floor system we're putting in there. It does show all new framing. And that's I thought that was pretty clear when he approved it.
Wayne, is there any chance that this could be held over for one meeting and get the building inspector to join us or give us a statement? It sounds like we got some conflicts going on between the partial demolition against, we had to take it down. We stopped. It sounds like we're just going to go round and round here. I mean, I understand where Chris is coming from, but he also understand where we are. Mm-hmm. And, the definitions, I wonder if we could get a little clarification.
That's what I said, is this could go as we want to now, or we'll have to have another meeting and consider for complete demolition, find out historical significance, and go through the whole thing. So, public hearing, all that. So
yeah, my only concern was, I want to move this along too. I really do. I'd rather come to a consensus on this and make a decision. My only concern was when I talked to Wayne last week, he had indicated that he would like to see hardy plank siding there. Right. I've been roofing for 30 years, and I know hardy plank is, everyone thinks it's the latest and greatest product. It's not. It's going to have problems in years to come. Tell you what.
Everything will.
All this engineered masonite siding and stuff like that, it's no good. I like I said, I do about 200 roofs a year, and I'm not just the salesman. I'm not just the owner. I'm the guy on the roof doing the work. I'm hands-on. When we come across more problems with that pressed concrete siding than we've ever come across with wood shingles, clapboards, vinyl siding, anything like that.
Do you want to use wooden clapboards?
We could use wooden clapboards and paint it. I prefer not to. But I prefer to use like an AZAC product. There's really good AZAC siding out there now. Board and batten siding, cedar impressions, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to use. It's good. It's going to last. And when it gets compromised with water and stuff like that, you're not going to have an issue with it. People will be, we tore about 700 square of James Hardy siding off a building in Brockton last year that had only gone up about 5 years ago because it's flaking where it meets roof lines and stuff like that. It absorbs the water. It's not good. It's not a good product.
That's an application problem, Chris. That's an application problem. Yeah.
It is. But also, when it's cut and it has to be primed and painted on sides like that,
correct.
It's not the same as a factory installed paint.
Again, I think you're overstepping what we need to deal with this evening. My opinion is I would accept the 2 year because you're still going to be able to go on. You're just going to have to produce a few more documents before you do anything. Again, it's your the rest of the commission's decision. Yeah. But as was mentioned earlier, we can start all over again, which is going to delay you. Okay. As you've been told, we're trying to make this as easy as possible for everybody. But that's just my opinion. Is that I think I would accept it and go forward.
Okay,
Mr. Hands wishing to speak.
Sorry. Yeah.
Mr. Hands still thinks the violation is not on the part of Chris. the violation is on the original issuance of any kind of a demo permit before we had a chance to weigh in.
Right.
And our demo delay bylaw is much stricter on partial demolition than what the building inspector seems to be. Is there any way we can remove Chris from this so-called penalty, reach an agreement of what we'd like to see in a house that was built around, what, 1900, maybe even a little bit later? It wouldn't have, I swear to God, it wouldn't have been professionally preserved. And after doing 59 of those macros forms, I was really happy to see one I didn't have to do because the house was gone. But
I think I'm with you here, Ed, because we know exactly what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
That there's no 2 years out here. This is immediate. Correct me if I'm wrong, Wayne, we may not. This is, the circumstances on Center Street are definitely different in that situation where they were actually proposing some work to be done, which we found was deficient. So my thought here is exactly what Ed's saying is, it provided Chris, the applicant, stays with that plan that was given to the building inspector, that we're okay.
Yeah, I have no intentions to vary from that plan. That's
yeah.
Pretty much, I have everything ordered. You know.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, not, I haven't ordered the windows and stuff yet, but I've all the lumber ordered for that. Sure. I have. I'm framing. So
you're still proposing a vinyl siding.
Yeah.
You can call it AZEK, whatever you want, but it's a plastic vinyl siding.
Yeah. And the commission could find that is fine for, you know, a replacement building for a non-historically significant structure.
Yeah, I think that's probably fine. Do you have the product you're using, Chris? Do you know?
Yeah, I sent a link to it when I did the application.
Okay. Okay.
I don't have it here in front of me right now, but it's nice. It's not cookie cutter stuff. It's nice. It's a board and batten.
Okay. Fun. Here it comes.
Yeah, that's it there. Yeah.
All right. You're using the simulated shingles.
Yeah. The cedar impression shingles.
Yeah.
Metal roofing on the porches. The trim is all AZEK trim. And then.
Which you use. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. And then the windows that I had proposed, I sent them into you too. They're two over two with real divided light. It's not the simulated, or it's not between the glass.
That's
it's
nice.
Real mullions in them.
What was in the house, do you recall?
What was in there? Two over twos.
Okay. All right. So you're carrying that on.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, everyone. Let's back this up a little. We can, so the outcome here is no different, Chris. If we say this is a total demolition, it doesn't matter. What we're going to do is not oversee this thing for the 2 year, provided you're building exactly what you're proposing, which you said you have. All we need to do is, I think at this point, is to find if the house was historically significant, and then move along from there. Wayne, any thoughts?
No, if the commission does not feel that there has been a violation of the demolition review by law, they do not have to pursue that. So this could be considered as a demolition review application, straight up, and a determinant of significance.
But retain oversight?
Not really, no. But if this is the building and materials and elevations that will be proposed, and the commission is reasonably comfortable with them. And then also, I believe that there will need to be a special permit for the two family at this point, possibly either because there's a variance or a special permit that's needed. And
that's not us, though.
That's the planning board, but they will seek a comment from the historical commission. And one of the possible public benefits the planning board considers in special permits for two families is, you know, neighborhood character and historic resources and such.
Right.
So the historical commission's endorsement of the proposed plan elevation and materials, I think, would be of use.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so where do we want to go here?
If the commission does not believe that there is a violation, they do not have to go in that direction. They could consider this purely as a demolition review application and start off with a motion, second, and vote as to whether 159 Washington Street is or is not historically significant.
Any thoughts or a motion?
Yeah, I got a thought. I have my hand raised again. Nobody seems to notice that anymore. Yell like I did, you know, in school. You can, I can't do anything with my screen right now, Wayne, because you're, you know, monopolizing it, but you could check the assessor's record right now and they would have a date there that indicates when they believe that it was built. And I believe it's 1900. I also want to add that we had a historian named Carl Holmander do a book on Unionville several years ago. And he was meticulous in including how every house except 159, because he didn't consider it to be historically significant.
All right. So we consider him the guru of Unionville.
Well, yeah. Sorry. Carl, I've donated a lot of stuff to Carl over the years. I renovated my own home and my other home on 17 Reynolds Street. And I found newspapers from the 1910 and I gave them all to Carl. So I understand he knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
So.
All right. So that being said, Ed, it sounds like you're on the side of
not historically significant.
Just letting this go. Okay. So is that a motion?
Yes.
Okay. I'll second it. And we need a vote. Hurley, aye.
Hands, aye.
Aye.
Spencer, aye.
Okay. We have that done.
Then we're done.
Okay. All right. So, Chris, you will abide by what you've submitted.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Listen, I do a lot of work for people here in town. Not want to try and burn bridges or do something that's going to mess my business.
Okay. All right. Okay. So we're good to go there, I guess.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Take care.
Well, we hope that never goes that way again. That's not the way we hopefully do business in the future. I won't say time wasted, good discussions, you know. And again, we're not here to punish people, which we try to help. So I think it was maybe a little learning thing for everybody. Anyway, moving along, we've got no information on our next one, which is the house on Foundry Street, I believe is the address.
Yeah, we have not received a demolition review application. They had indicated they planned to submit one, but just never actually did. So
I think there's a still for sale sign out there. I think that's a feeler to see if in fact it could go, and they maybe don't want to spend the time or the money to find out right now, you know. See where they probably have to spend money to submit or you know, have it declared unsafe or whatever. So in the meantime, pay no attention to the
to have it as a placeholder on this agenda in case it did come in a couple days ahead. So we could be responsive to people.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Moving along, we are at the fun time of what do we got first? Ed?
I think Swift's Park.
Yeah, Swift's Park
is coming up. Yeah.
If you could, please.
Yes.
Thank you.
What we're doing tonight is going to provide you with some information in case you've missed it, and ask you for a letter of support to go to the Board of Selectmen and town meeting. So over the course of the last couple of years, I've done a million PowerPoint presentations, and I'm fairly sure the one I'm going to show you is the most recent. In order to save some time, I'm assuming that since we're the Historical Commission, we know where Furnace Village is, so I won't start with that. But I do want to show you one thing, and let me get there. Hopefully. Let's see, share. And some, oh, hold on. Is it going to let me actually show this? There we go. Maybe. Give me one sec. There we go.
Can't hear you, Ed. There you go.
What? You can hear me now?
Now I can, yes.
Good. So, this is slide number 5, and I just want to point out that that marker on the left hand side that says Furnace Village, that took our 100% stipend from the town for the Historical Commission back in 1974. Okay, and I was there the day that was dedicated. It was part of our attempt to turn the Furnace Village district into a National Register district. We were unsuccessful in 1974, but by 1983, we were successful. So the commission celebrated by putting Swift's Park on the other side of the marker and moving it over a little bit. So the Historical Commission has been deeply involved in Swift's Park for a long time. And Swift's Park was donated to the town in 1934 in honor of Lawrence Swift, who was a medical orderly in World War I, who died treating people during the flu epidemic. So we're arguing for a revitalized memorial park rather than the bare space with a few trees and one tombstone. And we'd like to recognize the heroes and lives lost in both the 1918 and 2020 pandemics. We'd like to recreate the original village core, which everybody today kind of thinks goes down 106 from Five Corners to Target. But in reality, the core of the neighborhood is the Highland Street, Pequannocket Street axis, and the little Swiss Park back in the olden days had a bandstand and was the central focal point of the neighborhood. This little tiny micro park, it's a third of an acre, is part of the open space and recreation plan that says that every neighborhood should have one of these small parks. Northeastern has two. It has the one behind the old grammar school, and it has a little tiny Povos Park on Center Street. Working on the plan, we've come up with the idea.
So, Ed, could I interrupt just for a second?
Who's sure. that?
It's Stephanie. Sorry, Stephanie Danielson, identifying myself. So does everybody know where the park is? And you skipped over the beautiful picture of the park today. But does everybody know where it is and what it looks like today?
Yes.
Shaking her head, yes. And she's the only one I can see.
Okay.
Jim's on the committee. I'm on the committee.
John.
Yeah, and John's on the committee, but John's not here, so he's not.
Right. Right.
Okay. So, yeah, we kind of knew that.
Okay, sorry. I will mute and hide myself again.
You don't have to hide yourself or mute. Anything you'd like to say, just jump in. One of the things that we kind of are developing is that this little mini park could be a trailhead for the nearby conservation land, because there's paths back there that can be made to come up to the area where we're going to hopefully have a water bubbler. water spigot, not a bubbler. And there'd be a rest stop there for pedestrians and bicyclists. And then finally, it's going to help foster appropriate neighborhood development by supporting the new zoning bylaw. We want this to look new. It's, I mean, look good because it's an experiment in new zoning. And so far, if you've driven by there recently, it seems to be working. Rick Lincoln has restored the houses on the north side of the of 106, and the fence that CPC voted money for, town meeting voted money for, is now up, and it looks spectacular, just like it was promised to be. And the project met the criteria for CPA funding, and they approved a sum of money for the project to go to town meeting. Those criteria are there should be significant matching funds, and that's the next step in our process, is to come up with matching funds, conform to the recommendations of the Envision Easton and open space plans, demonstrate significant community support, and members of the community have come out to serve on the Swifts Park committee and also to support us at various meetings. And then finally, my favorite one should be outside of Northeastern Village. And we have a new zoning plan, and the idea is to promote a live work environment that is more pedestrian oriented. And sometime this spring or early summer, there'll be a traffic light and a crosswalk at the end of Pequannock at Avenue. So that will facilitate that and connect the park up. It won't be an isolated island that nobody can get to. No one suggested at the time this was passed that creating a revitalized neighborhood had to wait until sidewalks were put in along Foundry Street 8 to 10 years in the future. Proving that this is not the latest edition of the slideshow, because we've taken this slide out, but that was one of the main criticisms, that we should wait until the sidewalks came in. Unfortunately, that doesn't work very well because costs will go up. So from 2002 to 2023, 55 of the 120 CPC projects costing about $22 million were centered in Northeastern. In that same period, three projects were funded in Furnace Village, and those basically in the last 3 years. CPC spending in Northeastern preserved historic buildings, expanded public parks, and increased residential housing. In other words, these projects revitalized what has become the town's most vibrant neighborhood, while generating new tax revenue for the town. And this was the presentation that went to the select board, or would have gone to the select board. Basically, it says, is the select board interested in revitalizing another neighborhood core for a cost less than 15% of what's been spent on fields and playgrounds at the school complex? So we're asking for a little over $700,000. And we voted last year $3.5 million for the playground improvements at the school complex. Basically, here's a map of what the place looks like, and the area inside the red line is where the park's going to be, except for that little corner over by Pequannock, and that's going to stay the same. But the area to the left, where there looks like there's it actually is the old street that came through there, that's going to be turned into parkland, so the park will be expanded a little bit beyond what it is. And there's what it would look like. So we had a commit, we hired a landscape architect, the same architect that did the design for the beacon project at the Shovel Works. She came up with three options. These two options were looked at by the committee, and they found that they were too expensive and they were too urban looking. We're trying to preserve the historic look of Furnace Village. This was the planting plan as of October, And there have been substantial changes to this then. Again, I apologize. I don't have the right slide deck up tonight. Sorry. This is what it will look like, however. And basically what we've done in order to save costs, we've simplified the landscape plan. We'll have two flat areas of grass and a central area with granite pavers, and then walkways that are going to be fronted by low stone walls, 3 foot tall stone walls, except in one area where the stone wall will be 6 feet tall. That's over, let's see if I can do that. Yeah, right here in this area here. And this is where there'd be a memorial inscription. And because the people in Furnace Village want to emphasize the historic nature of the town, of the village, they're going to be there's going to be engravings of the historical events that fit down there. The beginning of the Revolutionary War, the cannon foundry, and believe it or not, our little furnace was one of the first in the country to make interchangeable parts for the mills up in Lowell. We discovered that last year and looking through the books of the company. There'll be a sculpture of some sort in the middle here. Basically, what we're looking at is an abstract metal sculpture that would look more like a flame. We did look at human sculptures, but it turns out if you're trying to honor first responders, in our latest pandemic, you had your fire department, your police department, your nurses, your doctors, your teachers, your grocery store clerks, and after a while, that's just way too many people to make a sculpture for. So, see, this is, okay. Stephanie, feel free to disagree here. We came in with an original request of almost $1 million, and we did a lot of cost cutting. And came up with a number here. In reality, we believe that the CPC actually voted a little bit more than this. Is that correct, Stephanie?
No, I think that's the amount.
That is the amount. Hallelujah. Okay. Was yeah. There is a slide someplace that says
that was my yeah.
Okay. Ha. Okay. Once in a while, I am right. So 697. 484 down from 963. And basically we did that from cuts to the original proposal. We were hoping to have a water feature in the middle. I heard more about water features than I ever want to hear ever again. They're way too expensive to put in, not so much because the fountain requires maintenance, which is a consideration for the DPW, but because the infrastructure for a fountain is quite expensive. We came up with a realistic plan for donations. We're hoping to exceed $60,000 in donations, and those would be donations and grants. And we're just beginning to look at the grant process. We are going to be having basic site prep done by the DPW, and the DPW was also very helpful in simplifying the landscape design because they needed something that was lower maintenance than was originally proposed. And then finally, we reduce costs by preserving only the essentials to the park. And we have some proposed materials. These are the granite pavers over here. We're going to use aggregate concrete on the paths. And that's kind of what the walls are going to look like right there. Okay. So we could now go through here and look at all of these, but let's just skip through this. I just want to show you how this compares to some of the local projects that we've done. Back in 2002, the very first thing that was partially funded by the CPC was the rockery restoration, which cost in total $271,000. Today, if we did that project, it would cost almost $500,000. The Quesit Gardens over the years, $500,000 or more. Today it would cost around $766,000, and that is essentially not any more space than is in the park. in Furnace Village. And we can continue on Alley's Park, et cetera, et cetera. But the big one is Richardson Olmsted. We didn't ask the school, the CPC didn't ask the school department to put in any money here. And we recommended fully funding that with CPC money. So that's $3.5 million to a project. This is a park in Boston, which is actually smaller than our park. And the total project cost is estimated to be $500,000. And with their CPA putting in the full amount until they can come up with some donations. So park space isn't cheap anymore, which is something that we all were surprised to find out. Our donation program is going to do the normal, you know, levels. We were hoping to have people buy trees and benches, but it just didn't make any sense to do it that way. So there'll be four levels of donation, and then we're going to encourage people to buy the pavers around the sculpture so that they can honor either a first responder or someone like my cousin who passed away during the pandemic. And then here's a list of some of the places we're going to be looking for donations. I mean, grants. And this is more for the town. I'm sure you guys know this. CPC projects don't raise the tax rate. CPC donations is fixed at 3%. It hasn't changed since 2002 and is unlikely to change. Those local funds are supplemented by the state annually. And then these funds form a bank that can only be drawn upon by the town meeting for historic preservation, open space and recreation projects, and affordable housing. And then we have a summary here for what's gone on in the last 5 years. Local contributions averaged in the last 5 years, $1.4 million. The state has contributed about a third more. So we're getting contributions of around $2 million a year that can only be used for historic preservation, open space, and affordable housing. We can't use CPC funds to close any budget shortfalls. It's not a rainy day fund. And we need to make that clear to town meeting because this proposal is going to come up at the annual town meeting, which is also when the budget battles will be going on. And that's the slideshow. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you, Ed.
Nicely done.
So what we're asking is a letter of support signed by... Is it a conflict of interest to have the chair and the vice chair sign this since they're both on the Spark Committee?
No, we're not being paid. We're not making any money on it. No, we can support it.
All right. So we're looking for a letter of support. We have a letter from the Council on Aging. The selectmen have not voted on this yet, but they seem very supportive when we made our presentation to them.
Recreation, Ed, have you got a
we're on the list to be going to see them.
Gotcha. Okay.
Ed, could I just add a little bit to
this?
Absolutely,
please. Yes.
So when Ed talked about the new zoning in the Furnace Village District area, I think, and he mentioned some of the new development that the developer Rick Lincoln has been responsible for, such as, you know, the old foundry site is being redeveloped with residential housing. From a historical standpoint, and I think as significantly, he renovated the old, and Wayne or Ed are going to correct me, it's not the Belcher House.
Well, it's actually what we would call the Belcher Bullfinch House in honor of Caroline Bullfinch, who was a member of the commission for many years.
Yeah. So, you know, that old federal style house has been converted into condominiums. It's been historically preserved. The land adjoining it was divided so that taking advantage of the new zoning so that two new houses could be built. And if you've been by there, you'll see that they're really well done from an architectural standpoint. They complement the district and the historical nature of the district. And the Swifts Park is really being viewed as, and we're getting a lot of support from the folks that live in the Furnace Village area, reinforcing this, that the redeveloped Swifts Park will really be a highlight and a gem in that area, almost like a gateway to kind of announce and recognize the district. And as Ed has mentioned, as a memorial for victims of both of the pandemics, but also the historic significance of the district.
Thank you. Anyone else? At this point, if I could have a motion or a letter of support for the Swifts Park project.
I'll make the motion.
All right, I'll second the motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. The vote, Hurley, aye.
Hands, aye.
Bishop, aye.
Spencer, aye.
Thank you all. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
All right.
I'd like to thank everyone as well.
Okay, I think Stephanie, you're still on with us.
Yeah, we should recognize before Stephanie makes her presentation the amount of time and effort that she's put into this project that came out of the blue for her.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Steph. Okay, Stephanie, I think you're up next, aren't you?
I am. You get okay, my
this is our presentation for BTA.
And I know Ed's seen it before. Actually, Mickey's not on, so I know she's seen it when we presented to the Affordable Housing Trust.
Right, right.
Let me share my screen. Okay. So first off, thank you for letting me come and speak tonight. I have been doing this roadshow by myself and with the chair of the zoning board. The past chair, we have another new chair, Bob Stetson, and I haven't started to enlist him yet to help out with these. But basically, I'm here tonight to talk about the zoning mandate that came about from the state that requires that MBTA communities have a zoning district that requires that supports or allows multifamily housing by right. So just quickly, I'm going to talk about what the MBTA Communities Law is, how it came about. I'm going to talk about what it means to Easton from a compliance standpoint, why the town needs to comply and is complying with this new law, and then the steps that Easton has taken. And you folks outside of the planning board meeting on Monday night, last night, will be the first to see the final districts that the board voted to present at town meeting or advance to town meeting. So this is, as I mentioned, the MBTA Communities Law is a requirement that MBTA communities have a zoning district, at least one zoning district, that allows multifamily housing by right. The law came into effect at the state level as a result of the 2021 Economic Development Bond Bill. And what it did was it created a new section, Section 3A of Chapter 40A. And Chapter 40A is what is commonly referred to as the Zoning Act. It was part of the Economic Development Bill because the intention of the law is to try to create more housing, multi-family housing, rental housing in the Commonwealth. Massachusetts is in the middle of a housing crisis. We're feeling it here in Easton, and certainly there are other communities as well where there just is not enough housing for the people that want to live in the community and across the state to live in the state. Wayne, I have not gotten very far.
Hi, if you have a presentation, I don't think it's visible.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't know if you, if it's like on. If,
no,
if
I do. So let me ask. No, can, what is it? What are you all seeing?
Windows.
Oh yeah. Well, a window screen.
New screen.
I thought the plan was a little sketchy, but.
Okay.
I don't know if your computer thinks it's on its second screen, you know, once on the two computers.
I can fix it. Hold on. Let me just fix it. Thank you for pointing that out. All right. So let me, tell me when you can see it.
There you go. There it is.
Okay. Sorry about that. All right. I'm like, why is Wayne interrupting me at this point? I don't think I'm wrong on this point. All right. So again, this requirement came about as a result of the Economic Development Bond Bill, and it's tied to economic development because if you don't have sufficient housing or housing that people can afford to live in the state, they will start moving to other states. They'll move outside of Massachusetts, and it makes it difficult to attract new people and certainly younger people for working into the community and into the state. And without enough people living in the state, you don't have enough people to fill the workforce, and businesses suffer and start to leave, or they just don't thrive as they can. And we're seeing this locally here in Easton. The Economic Development Council has held two business forums over the last 18 months. And in each of those forums, business owners talked about how it's difficult to find people to work for their businesses who can afford to live in Easton or even afford to live close to Easton. So it's really affecting the local businesses as well as statewide. The intent is further to reduce local zoning barriers to multifamily housing. You can see we have this big, you know, the universal do not sign. This is not a mandate to build housing. It is a requirement that the towns adopt a district that allows multifamily housing by right, which means you can't deny if a developer wants to build a multifamily project. It can't be denied by the town. Sorry, there was something else I was going to add just at that moment and it evaporated. So we will move on. It'll come back to me. It was explaining what an MBTA community is. So an MBTA community is a town or a city that hosts an MBTA transit station or is adjacent to another community that hosts a transit station. And Easton is adjacent to Stoughton, Brockton, and Mansfield, all of whom have, commuter rail transit stations or bus stations in their communities. And I talked about the fact that the zoning must allow multifamily housing as of right. The district has to be at least 50 acres in total. If you're an MBTA community, that 50 acres needs to be located within a half mile of the transit station. Of course, Easton doesn't have a transit station. It's considered an MBTA adjacent community. So in that instance, your district should be located in proximity to businesses, other residences, neighborhoods, areas where there are services available to the people that live there, and in proximity to some type of transportation corridor, whether it's the a main arterial corridor, or the highway system, or where the distance to the train station or MBTA commuter station is within reasonable distance. Your district must be able to support 15 units per acre or allow up to 15 units per acre. And it must district-wide support a minimum of 10% of the municipality's permanent housing stock. And in Easton's case, that is 913 units. The permanent housing stock is 9,130, thereabouts. So 10% of that is 913 units. Any questions so far? And I can only see three people, so if Tim or anyone else are raising their hands, I can't see them.
I'm just saving power, Stephanie. That's all. I'm here.
Okay.
I'll come back if I have questions.
All right. So, you know, we've been asked the question, why is the town moving forward with this mandate? Why are they, you know, not taking a stance against opposing it? Well, primary reasons is that Easton, as part of its long-range planning over the past many years, has prioritized increasing diverse housing options for the residents in town. Easton's also, those zoning planning documents also talk about proactively planning for mixed-use income and mixed-use development areas. And the type of housing is consistent with Easton's plans to increase housing opportunities where Easton has and continues to make significant investments. Importantly, it supports Easton's economic development and housing goals as well. As I mentioned earlier, housing and availability of housing and housing that's affordable to all the residents is challenging in Easton currently. And there are many people in the community who are asking themselves and don't have answers to the questions, can their children afford to live here when they grow up and they go off to school and they want to come back and they want to raise their families in a town they grew up with and know well? Can someone's parents afford to live here as they age? And if their life circumstances change, are they going to be able to stay in Easton or are they going to be forced to leave? As I mentioned, the law requires that the MBTA communities adopt a compliant zoning district. As an adjacent community, Easton needs to comply by the end of December 2024, and communities that are not compliant, first and foremost, will become ineligible for infrastructure and planning grants. And the Attorney General has made it very clear that she will take legal action against communities that don't adopt a district. And we've seen that with Milton, where they had been awarded certain grants, and I'm going to talk about some of those grants that Easton has benefited from in a minute. They clawed back some of the grants that had been awarded within the last year. And there is a lawsuit that has been enacted against the community by the Attorney General. Easton has received several million dollars in funding from the grant programs, some of the grant programs that the state has identified as being ineligible to non-compliant communities by the date they need to comply. And in Easton, the Northeastern Village, we've seen almost $3 million in funding there. Furnace Village, $1.5 million in 2019 helped fund the sewer installation and helped reduce the betterment fees to that to the residents there. We have received several housing choice grants that have helped with the design of these certain infrastructure projects, and recently received $400,000 for the Lincoln Street sidewalks. And I want to tie back to a point that Ed was making in the Swift's Park presentation. He talked about the investments the town had made in North Easton, and in particular around the North Easton or downtown area. And I don't think you were as eloquent this evening as you were at the select board meeting, talking about what happened there and how it sparked all the new economic growth in that area and made it such an attractive place for people to live, for people to come and dine. There's open space that's available there. Well, some of that money, it wasn't just CPA funds. There were a lot of CPA funds that went into it, but it was also state funding from some of these programs that would no longer be available to the town. Oh, that's a duplicate. So how's Easton complying with the law? Back in 2022, when the state, through the Executive Office of Housing and Community Development, issued guidelines for implementing this requirement, the Select Board held a public hearing where they were briefed on what the zoning meant, what it meant to Easton, and at that time, they voted to convene a zoning implementation review team that was comprised of representatives from various boards in town, including the school committee, planning board, the conservation commission, the affordable housing trust. I don't know if I'm missing any others, Wayne will pipe up. But the point is that it was made up of residents from Easton, along with staff and other municipal officials. That group convened for a couple of months. Their charge was to review the guidelines and prepare comments for the select board to submit back to DHCD. And those comments were intended to help refine the zone, the guidelines, and identify where there might be concerns with the municipalities on certain aspects. So for example, when the guidelines first came out, towns were not going to be allowed to have an affordability mandate. And that's something that Easton has had in the past. So when we adopted the flexible development, that allows a developer to develop residential housing, single family homes on smaller lots, which makes it more economic for the developer, but they had to provide at least 10% of the housing units had to be affordable. So not allowing that for communities as part of this MBTA zoning was an issue for communities, and they raised the flag. They said, we want to be able to require at least 10% of the units that might be developed on this zoning to be affordable. And that the guidelines would change so that that would be allowed. And the same with allowing for or incentivizing for mixed use, allowing commercial or encouraging commercial within the district. The implementation team also developed guiding principles for developing the districts and the zoning. And then they identified 8 areas where the district might be, the various districts might be located. And that reminds me, so you have to have, your district has to be 50 acres in total. It can be comprised of sub-districts. At least one of those sub-districts has to be 25 acres, contiguous acres in total. And each of the sub-districts has to be at least 5 acres in total. So again, this board identified around 8 areas that were potentially could comprise the sub-districts. After the DHCD guidelines were issued finally at the kind of early 2023, late 2022, the planning board started discussions and holding public hearings and information sessions on the proposed zoning and started talking about what the zoning should look like. At their meeting last night, what the board approved is this year, there were three districts that they approved to move forward to town meeting. The first area, and you'll recognize, you may recognize this, this is Robert Drive, and this is where the Target is located. This is the shopping plaza, and this is Avalon. This we've been referring to as the Eastman Foundry Street. It was one of the original areas identified by the review team. And initially, the board was considering all the parcels on the north side of Eastman Street along Robert Drive, a few parcels on the south side. In the very beginning, they reduced the south side, eliminated those parcels, and we're looking at all the parcels here on the north. After receiving quite a bit of input from the Furnace Village residents, who were very concerned about new traffic coming onto Route 106, the board revised the district and it just includes the Avalon area. And the Avalon area is currently built out to around 15 units per acre. The other area that the board has voted on is around Roach Brothers. Again, this started out a little bit larger. We had some properties on the east side over on the other side of Washington Street. This is Roach Brothers Plaza. This is also located along the MBTA right-of-way. So if the South Coast Rail ever did come to Easton, this would be part of the district that the state would then require at that time. And then the third district is located along the southeast corner of Washington Street and Belmont Street. And this is the marketplace. Again, it started off as part of the proposed district and was reduced because additional feedback that the board was hearing is people did not want the town to over accommodate for the acreage and the number of units that were required. And I'll show you a chart in a minute that shows the different iterations that the board went through to get to this district. We know that there's a property owner that would love to develop this area with the multifamily housing. And there is multifamily housing that exists here. These are two apartment buildings. So I'm going to zoom in a little bit on this one. Okay, I'm going to try to figure out there. I can move you all over there. So when the board first started considering those three options, the Eastman Foundry Street was, was more than 68 acres. I think it was 97 in total. It was reduced down to 68. It's now been reduced down to 22 acres. Belmont, Washington is 20. And you have the Washington North 33. And you'll remember I just said that at least one of the districts has to be 25 in total. This was one of the iterations of reducing it down. This would have yielded 1,115 total units capacity. Feeling that was still too high, we looked at, and this eliminated, this is just Avalon and Belmont, Washington with the marketplace and some of the parcels along the west side of Belmont Street. It was further reduced, reducing some of the Belmont Street parcels, but not excluding the marketplace. That brought us down to 1,077 unit capacity and 72 acres. And the final iteration reduces the acreage to 65 in total and 972 units capacity. Unit capacity of 972. This is just a slide explaining we've had several meetings going over this, and the deliberation and final vote was on Monday night. The planning board plans to continue reaching out to the public to educate folks and ensure that they're informed on what the zoning is and what it isn't, and is hoping that people will go to town meeting and recognize the work that was put into this, the thought that was put into it, to ensure both that the locations made sense and were in areas that Easton had already considered this type of zoning, and pass at time of need. And I will entertain any questions. This is a very silent group.
Because everybody's on mute except me and Wayne. So.
But no, nobody's, so, okay.
Here we go.
That is the end of the presentation.
What is the follow-up from here, do you think? Open houses, ways for people to find out more information, to call you?
So a couple of things. Throughout this process, we have maintained a web page that has full information on what the zoning is and has been updated as the planning board has gone through this process with the maps that I just showed folks, different iterations, and ways for people to comment if they haven't come to the meetings. It also has publicized the meetings. Now that the board has determined what the districts are, it's still important to make sure that people understand what the zoning is and what it means to the town and get to town meeting. So we are planning on at least a couple of open houses where people will be welcome to come in. There'll be staff and planning board members of the planning board available to help people understand what the zoning is and answer any questions. And we'll probably be reaching out and seeing if we can't be present at some community events and set up a booth like at the NRT, things like that, just to continue to provide information with people. People are encouraged to go to the website. They can call me if they have any questions. We can pose questions to the planning board members if that's helpful for folks. And yeah.
Wayne told me there'd be a halftime show.
We asked Taylor Swift, but she was tied up.
Anyone? Any comments? Thank you. A lot of work there. Thank you. Yeah, and I know you've been out.
I think they've done a really good job of minimizing the impact of a bad law. Clearly, we need affordable housing. And I think that in communities like ours, where we have, you know, people that are actively thinking about providing this, we could have done a better job than having a one-size-fits-all thing from the state. And I hope we make that clear to our beloved state representatives and just let them know that they need to do better than this.
Yeah. And, you know, we have been used as an example with other communities that have worked with various organizations like the Old Colony Planning Council as they work through this and try to figure out how to configure their zoning districts, because Easton has really worked very hard over the last 12 years to provide different options for housing and to create mixed use neighborhoods in areas that are located near major arterial corridors, and again, in as close proximity to other towns who have commuter rails. All right. Well, thank you so much, and have a good evening, and hope to see you on the town meeting.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do we have nothing else on the agenda or anything unanticipated by the chair? No. Wayne's ears are burning. Motion, please, to adjourn.
So moved.
We got a movement in a second. Okay, Hurley, aye.
Hands, aye.
Chip, aye.
Spencer, aye.
Thank you all. Much appreciated.
Thanks, folks. Have a great night.
Have a good night.
Bye.